CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Joseph Sternberg in London. He writes political economics for the Wall Street Journal editorial page. And Joe has written carefully over the last year and a half about the inflation story in America. Well, it's here. In fact, it's several days past, and the AP is now reporting, quote, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell won praise for his deft leadership during the maelstrom of the pandemic recession. As threats to the U.S. economy have mounted, though, Powell has increasingly struck Fed watchers as much less sure-footed. Joe, that's a very careful way of saying that there are doubts after Jerome Powell made remarks last week about 0.75 point raise, which was not seen for many decades, and what's ahead of us. I don't think it's the 0.75 points. If I could summarize my reading of your paper these last days, it's confidence. It's trust in Jerome Powell. Does he have a steady hand on raising rates to solve inflation? Or is he going to listen to political voices who will be very uncomfortable if this leads to unemployment and other dysfunctions? So what is your measure of Jerome Powell's remarks last week, now that in the second week afterwards, the doubts are being expressed by the AP?
Well, I think the problem that you're running into with the Fed now, and this is actually becoming common with a lot of major central banks around the world, so there is a growing divergence between what they are doing and what they are saying. So the actions at last week's Fed meeting, the 0.75 percentage point increase in interest rates, is quite hawkish. It's very, very rare for the Fed to increase rates that much at one go. They're much happier increasing in quarter point increments. So far, so hawkish. The difficulty then is all of the rhetoric that surrounds that. And if you look at the economic projections that the Fed also released after the meeting, which was an exercise that they do every quarter, they still seem to think that the inflation is going to moderate largely on its own over the next year. And they're anticipating that they can front load a lot of the interest rate increases that they'll need to do to tame inflation over this cycle just within the next few months. And then after that, kind of slow the pace of the rate increases. And I think that people are now starting to ask how realistic any of that is, because really, experience has shown that if you want to get inflation under control, ultimately the nominal interest rate that the Fed sets has to be higher than the rate of inflation. And people are noticing that if you look at what the Fed is saying in their statements and these economic projections that they release, they are claiming that that does not have to be the case. They think that they will be able to get inflation under control, even if their nominal interest rate is below the rate of inflation, which means that real rates are still negative. There's no historical reason to think that that's true, but the fact that the Fed is talking in that very dovish way, I think, creates a lot of confusion about what their intentions are and how far they would actually be prepared to go to get the inflation under control.
The GDP. In the first quarter, it was down more than 1 point. It was explained, but still, the fact is more than 1 point. The Atlanta Fed, which measures the economy ongoing during the quarter, now expects the second quarter GDP to be zero, which is, my memory, Joe, mighty close to negative. So are we now in recession becomes a debating point. We'll wait until we get to July and we get the first or second version. Does that signify for Jerome Powell's task ahead? Does a recession answer inflation faster than raising rates at the Federal Reserve?
Not necessarily, because, I mean, even though this notion that a recession is disinflationary or deflationary, I mean, that theory is very common in university economics departments and apparently the Fed research department. I would have thought that we learned in the 1970s that the real world doesn't always work that way. And so I think that the great danger that we're facing is that you can have the inflation and the recession at the same time. And in fact, we're seeing a lot of evidence that the inflation is causing the recession. I mean, to the extent that consumers are now having to pare back discretionary spending because what they're shelling out for food and fuel is rising so rapidly, that might be contributing to this broader decline in economic sentiment and expectations, and also the recessionary tendencies that we're seeing in front of us. And none of that is necessarily going to solve the inflation, because what solves the inflation is a combination of restoring people's confidence in institutions like the Federal Reserve and the government to run a sensible tax policy. And it also, fighting inflation requires stimulating more investment in the productive supply side of the economy so that you can have more supply of things that people want to buy to match all of this demand that we've got. If you don't have those two things, that confidence and that expanded supply, you can have the inflation at the same time that you have the recession.
The price of gasoline is what weighs on Americans. I know we can talk Federal Reserve, we can talk interest in Jerome Powell, but it's the price at the pump. The White House is now talking about, well, it's a debate. Do we remove the federal tax on a gallon of gasoline? I believe it's 18 cents. Everything adds up. At the same time, energy is the story here, not gasoline. Do you measure that the price of energy, if moderated, and the increase in energy production by the U.S. would solve this inflation story, would solve this recession story? Are we a product of the energy policies of these last years, the pandemic, the supply chain, Ukraine? Or is the energy story something that has a separate track, so it doesn't really answer where we are?
No, energy is a big part of it. I mean, energy is really very crucial to all of these discussions, because so much of the rest of the economy depends on the energy supply. You cannot ship products, you can't manufacture products, people can't drive themselves to and from work or take the train anywhere if you don't have energy. Particularly in the form of fossil fuels, but in other forms of energy too. And so one of the things I find aggravating about a lot of the Biden administration's discussions of energy policy is that they're floating things like the holiday on the federal gas tax, or before that it was releasing oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. They have it in their power to introduce policies and rhetoric about their policies that would unlock all of this domestic production. All you would need to do is have regulatory agencies that are less hostile to permits for domestic energy production and shipping the energy domestically once it's produced, coupled with an admission of error on some of the climate policies that they've been pursuing, and a recognition, which even the European Union has managed now, that some fossil fuels, especially natural gas, need to be part of the low carbon energy mix in the future. And if the administration could do that, you could unlock all of the supply, but they don't do either of those things. And so that means that companies that do want to invest in domestic production often can't get the permits that they need either to drill or to build pipelines. And most companies don't want to invest because they think that even though it might be profitable this year and the administration will welcome having it, after the inflation gets under control, you go back to this rhetorical war on fossil fuels. So, that is a classic example of how, if we could have more production of things, in this case, energy, it might help the inflation problem. And yet Washington keeps stepping on its own toes.
I know it's only 18 cents a gallon. That looks like federal spending. I know it's a backwards way to talk about spending. We're not going to take your money, so therefore you have more to spend. Isn't that part of the same story we've debated for a year now, Joe, that the federal spending associated with the pandemic was a driver of this unusually large inflation picture? Any federal spending?
Well, I think one has to be careful there. It's not just a matter of any kind of federal spending, because you have to think about how that money is actually being spent and how productive It is. So I think that for one of the reasons that so much of the pandemic era stimulus spending and even the infrastructure bill that passed in Washington, one of the reasons that was also inflationary is that a lot of it was not oriented toward boosting the productive supply of, in the economy. It was only stimulating demand. Now, from that perspective, I am actually slightly, ever so slightly sympathetic to the idea of cutting gas taxes, only because a big part of the pressure point for households in particular with the gas price is that it makes it difficult to get to and from work. So if you can reduce any federal tax that adds to the cost of working at the margin, you might encourage more people to work because you're reducing the punishing gas prices that weigh on their commute. But that is a poor substitute to much more meaningful measures like boosting the supply of energy in the economy by encouraging more drilling that would have a lasting impact here.
And I mentioned spending. It is still the observation that the spending of the American Recovery Act, in addition to the spending done by the Trump administration, is the concern of those who see inflation getting larger, that more additional spending, which would have been implicit in Build Back Better, and is still part of the story, I believe, a student loan is spending, student loan forgiveness. All of that contributes to inflation. Is that correct, Joe? That hasn't changed.
Yes, I think a lot of that can be very inflationary. And again, because so much of it ties into, are they actually spending money on productive things. And so often Washington is not. I mean, even with the infrastructure, we know from our long, miserable history doing infrastructure projects in America or anywhere else in the world, a lot of those projects might end up being bridges to nowhere or, airports with no passengers, highways to nowhere. You're going to end up spending all of this money and kind of bidding up wages and material costs away from the private sector that could actually be using all of that labor and materials for productive uses. And just so the government can have all of these white elephant projects, and that is hugely inflationary.
Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. We speak of America's inflationary problem, but we're going back to London because they've got a rail strike. They've got airports that don't work. And amazingly, Vladimir Putin is threatening the United Kingdom with what appears to be a nuclear strike from his missile called Satan II. And that's the beginning of the story. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.